Live Creative Now, episode 44.
Welcome to Live Creative Now with Melissa Dinwiddie, a weekly podcast to inspire you to create your art and share your work, because that's how you will change the world.
Hey, brilliant. This is Melissa Dinwiddie, passion, pluralite, artist, happiness catalyst, and creativity instigator, here to address all your questions about living a full color creative life. Whether you think of yourself as not artistic, not creative, or you think of yourself as an artist of any kind, or anything in between, the truth is that no matter how you define yourself, feeding your creative hungers makes you feel more alive. And it's how you change the world. The last episode, episode 43, was all about doodling as self-defense. Really, that's what it was all about. Today, I have a special treat for you. Podcast listeners know that most of my episodes are monologues. It's me and the microphone talking about all kinds of things related to living a full color creative life. But occasionally I bring on a guest. Of course, I ask lots of questions because I always invite guests that I have lots of questions about. But I see these guest calls as conversations as opposed to straightforward interviews, because it's much more about ideas flowing back and forth between us. And I had a really super fun conversation just last week that I wanted to share with you. It wasn't originally supposed to be on the podcast. One of the things that I do in my Creative Sandbox membership community, my paid community, is I bring in special guests to talk with the group in a live video conference room. So Creative Sandbox members can join in live, listen, ask questions, join the conversation. And of course, I record these conversations and I put them in a special archive, a special page in our membership site, so that members who aren't able to join in live can watch and listen to the whole thing after the fact. And last week, I brought in two guests instead of one, partners in work and life, Amy Tingle and Maya Stein, who together run the Creativity Caravan. And our conversation was so rich. I mean, all of these conversations always are, but it occurred to me that it would be really fun to share it with my podcast listeners. You'll get a trio of talkers in this extra long episode, and you also get a peek into one piece of the Creative Sandbox. This recording is unedited, except for one section where I was sharing something that I am only sharing with my Creative Sandbox members right now. I share things with them before I share with the wider public. So that's the only thing that was edited. I took that section out. Other than that, this is the raw conversation that Amy and Maya and I had, and the questions that the Creative Sandbox members brought to the conversation. Enjoy. And we're live. Hey, everybody. It's Melissa Dinwiddie with Living a Creative Life and the Creative Sandbox membership community. And I am so, so excited today to have Amy Tingle and Maya Stein, who I originally met at a camp in 2013, camp in quotation marks. It was at a resort hotel. But it had a different name that year, but it is now Life is a Verb Camp. Incredibly wonderful experience, wonderful community, amazing. And it just, you two brought so much to camp. That first year, Amy and Maya drove to camp with their caravan, camping caravan, one of those old trailers that is like a little, you know, cabin inside. I never actually went inside it, but I know that you had people coming inside. And they brought manual typewriters and set them up and would type a poem, a spontaneous poem, if you gave them a single word. And I never got to do that because there were always, you were always mobbed with people. But I was just so struck and impressed with that. And I got to take a 90-minute workshop with Maya, a writing workshop that changed my life, because that 3x5 card concept. I went after camp, I came home. Maya had had us do little writing exercises, prompts on 3x5 cards. So take 2 minutes, write whatever, you know, to this suggestion. And I took that 3x5 card idea and I did a year-long project where I wrote, I filled a 3x5 card, wasn't thinking of them as poetry necessarily, but filled a 3x5 card to a one-word prompt every day for a year. Nearly killed me, but I did it. And then 2 years ago, they both taught a workshop at the same camp that was in North Carolina that year. And I don't remember the name of the workshop, but it was all about bringing to life a big project. So Amy and Maya, first of all, welcome. Thank you so much for joining me. You are in New Jersey, right?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Where it's very cold. So tell me first about, I know you have a new business name. Can you talk about that business name and what it is that you do?
Sure. Sure. First of all, we're very glad to be here and thank you for inviting us to join you. And I'm so glad. I was personally very just delighted by your 365 3x5 project. And, you know, one never knows like how these assignments go out in the world. And I'm really, it's wonderful to know that it turned into something that became a practice for you. And I love that you took that sort of minimal space and expanded into it, you know, as a daily practice. It's wonderful. So our new name is the Creativity Caravan. And the old business name was called Food for the Soul Train, which was a very clever but confusing name. People thought we were a catering business. They were always wondering what we were serving and when, and you know. So the metaphors of food for the soul and the soul train joke of, you know, was sort of lost on most people. Who didn't grow up in the 70s. So we changed our name recently to the Creativity Caravan, which really reflects our mobility as a business and also puts the focus on the caravan itself. It's a vintage 1965 covered wagon trailer, and we sort of use it as our creative hub and sometimes a little mini classroom space. And it's really been such a significant icon in our work together as collaborators. So that it needed to sort of be front and center in our business name. So that's what happened.
And so do you drive places with the caravan and you do workshops with it? Is that what you do?
We do. we use it even locally, actually, as part of our business. We have a summer camp here in New Jersey for girls. And the caravan sort of becomes the quiet space for a lot of the girls who want to just take a break at some point during the day. The camp usually runs like school hours, 9 to 3. So it's a long time to be, you know, in the mix with girls. And if they get tired or they want to just take a break from the group dynamic, they can go inside the caravan. Last summer we had a little girl, she brought a book every day and she would go up in the caravan for 5 or 10 minutes just to recharge. She would get up on the top bunk because it has a bunk bed in the back. So she would get up on the top bunk with her book and just read for a few minutes to give herself, you know, some time and space. So it's perfect for that. And then we usually leave the typewriters in there. Kids can go in and types. We'll have like a creative writing prompt or something like that. So, and then when we use it on the road, we tend to be doing some of our larger scale projects, which I'm sure you're going to talk about. But those projects, we always have Maud is the caravan's name, which We named her after the character in the movie Harold and Maude, but also Maya came up with a great acronym that is Mobile Art Unit Designed for Everyone. So
I love that.
Well, I think what I really love about the space is that, you know, it's small, so there's an intimacy about it. And so when people come in, they kind of naturally, there's really not a place to, even they have, they're sort of in the space together with somebody else. And it kind of, it sort of encourages connection and conversation, I think, just by the nature of the, you know, the age of the caravan and the sort of quaintness of it and the little spaces that you can sit. And we also sleep there when we're on the road. So it's kind of like our little home away from home. It's a nice place to return to every night.
So cool.
Yeah.
So I want to know a little bit, I do want to dive into the, some of the big projects that you've done and how those came about, because you have this really cool sort of process that I would love everybody to hear about. But I want to get a little bit about your backgrounds first. So Maya, let's start with you. Like, just give us a little like elevator spiel of your background, how you came
the
to
last doing, 20 years.
Yeah, how you came to be doing what you're doing now. I know you, I know last time I looked at your personal website, it called you a ninja poet.
Yes.
Other things. Mm-hmm. So yeah, tell us a little bit about you.
Well, I've been writing for as long as I can remember. I mean, I really loved writing from a young age, and it was a place that I felt that I could, you know, really sort of expand into. And that was something I could take ownership of. And I've always loved writing. And in college, I studied creative writing. I studied poetry. And of course, it was very hard to get a job as a poet after that. So I actually worked in, I worked at a news magazine for a number of years. And then I moved into publishing and became an editor. And so there was sort of like this, there was always a relationship with words, but I think it took me a couple of years, I mean, working with other people's words, you know, before I really realized I wanted to return to my own. So at about the time I was 30, I left my job and I became a freelance writer, and I sort of farmed myself out in various capacities, but always really stuck to my own writing, you know, found a place. I started a poetry practice in 2005 of writing a 10-line poem every week. And I've kept that up. So it's been going on for 10 years. And I don't know. And then I started helping other people, you know, starting facilitating classes and retreats and sort of working with other people and helping them dig into their practice and find some new ways of writing and, you know, just kind of applying some of the things that I had discovered through my own time and also working with mentors and other teachers. So that's probably more than 30 seconds, but.
Oh, that's fine. No, there wasn't a time limit on it. So that, oh, I didn't know any of that. That's really cool. And do you still do freelance work?
I don't really. I mean, I kind of, I'm trying to think when I stopped doing that, but I think that just other things took its place. And I have, I mean, there's always like, there's some various, sometimes there's client, you know, people that say, well, you know, edit this short story, or, I mean, there's some, it's more of working with people, one-on-one with people to do, to help them with their work as opposed to working with other companies or anything. Mm-hmm. So, it sort of feels more like the focus has been more intimate, in the last number of years. And so, yeah, I haven't really done freelance work. It kind of phased out as I did start to do more online teaching and real time teaching. It really, I just spent more energy doing that and time. So,
mm-hmm. And is that most of your income is coming from the teaching?
It was, I would say. And I think now that Amy and I are working together, I mean, it's a combination. It's really something that we sort of patch together. It's my business, like my income has always been a kind of patchwork of things. And so we sort of, I mean, we have classes that we do together. We have, school program that we do through our work. And so there's a lot of stuff that we do together. And then I still do online teaching as part of the thing that helps us be sustainable. So.
Yeah. I always think of my own income as a patchwork quilt of income streams.
Yeah. And I think that's true for a lot of creatives. I mean, I think that, you know, you, part of the work is getting creative with your income, mechanisms. And so, you know, we still can't make a living writing poetry, but we can include poetry as one of the things that we do, you know, and the work that we do with our typewriters and the poetry there, and have that be an event that we can offer, or an activity that we can offer for events. And so it becomes, it's like we've learned how to introduce these loves of ours into a model that can accommodate them financially.
Yeah, that is so, I love the way that you say that. And I love that you have this practice, your 10 line poetry. By the way, she has a newsletter that goes out every week with the 10 line poetry. And I think, I'm just thinking about my own story of getting so burned out on, I was an artist making my living from calligraphy and art commissions, a lot of Jewish marriage contracts. I was a ketubah artist, and I got so burned out because I wasn't incorporating creating for me in it. And I love that you've managed to keep that as part of your, you know, part of the overall picture.
Well, I just notice, you know, when I'm invested in what I'm producing, I'm like, I have it, it's kind of there's like my energy for it just expands and deepens. My eye's not on the clock. And I noticed that when I was, you know, doing work for other people, my eye is very much on the clock because I'm getting paid by the hour or something. So, I mean, maybe there's a little bit of a sacrifice income wise, but I think in terms of energy and passion and the sustainability in those areas, I just think there's really no, you know, I wouldn't trade it.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm with you on that. And Amy, what about you? What's your nutshell?
Well, one thing I was just going to say about the idea of the patchwork quilt, because that's kind of how I describe it or think of it too, when I think about the way we create our income, it is a quilt. And I think I always had the idea that I would have one thing, you know, I would have one type of job, or I would somehow, we would hit on something that made us all our money and then we would be set or whatever, that idea. But I've realized that I actually don't know that I would enjoy that. I mean, there's part of me that really likes the fact that we do a lot of different things, and that we do piece it together in that way because we're always doing something different. I mean, every day looks a little bit different. And we both sustain a creative practice separately as individuals that really informs what we do together. So I'm more of a visual artist. I started, like, if you want to go back to the infancy of my career, I actually started in publishing and worked for Simon & Schuster in their children's book division. So I worked with writers and artists to create mostly picture books. Some young adult fiction, which is still an obsession of mine, to read. But, so I think, like, in a similar way to Maya, I wanted to be doing that myself, you know, and it's not that I went out and started writing my own children's books, but I wanted to be the artist who was sending in artwork, and I wanted to be doing my own writing, and not, you know, just managing somebody else's. So, around the same time, my kids were in school. I have two teenage boys, and I noticed that they were not really getting a lot of art in school. There was like an art cart that came around. They didn't even have an art class. Mm. And after sixth grade, they didn't have art anymore at all. It just disappears in the public school system here. And probably in a lot of places, unless the students choose to continue with art as an elective. And I wanted something for girls, especially, I think not only just to mix it up because I had boys living in my house, but just because as a girl myself, I felt like that was a place where I had lost some of the essence of who I was after I stopped taking, you know, having art in school. And so I wanted to give that back to girls and let them know that it didn't have to be something that disappeared, that it could be something that they continued throughout their life, whether it was a job that they did or somehow was just part of their lives. So I started teaching classes here in New Jersey for girls, sort of a combination of art and self-empowerment. And that included writing and just complete process. Like, we're just going to play. I'm going to give you a studio full of materials and we'll have, you know, sort of a goal of what we're going to do, but it's all about play and process and just trying new things. So that was about 7 years ago. And that's still our camp in the summer that Maya and I do together. That's still basically what we do just for those summer weeks. But
wow, that is so incredibly cool. I so resonate with what you said about feeling like the art just disappeared. I know that was definitely the case for me. And I mean, I got so trapped in comparison. By age, I think it was 13, I just was like, I'm not an artist, that other people are artists, I'm not. And I didn't get back to it until I was almost 30.
Yeah.
So I love that people like you are out there and showing girls an alternative vision that's so much more empowering and wholehearted and keeps them connected.
And that is actually, strangely enough, the same thing that happened to me. I didn't stop at 13, but I managed to keep up with art through high school. I chose it as an elective all through high school and took every class that was possible, but I wanted to go to art school, and that's when the comparison game hit me. I just thought, I'm not as good as everybody else in my class. I can't. I had my portfolio done, and I just put it in the closet and didn't open it until my kids were young, and I just wanted something to do and started taking local art classes again as an adult. And that's when my mind sort of, you know, blew open again, and I thought, why did I give up this piece of myself? It's so integral to who I am. And I was creating all the time, but in ways that didn't look like creativity necessarily. Yep. And I realized, well, I need to open this door again and leave it open.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think it's, you know, it is interesting. We have in some ways very different backgrounds in terms of the ways, in terms of, I mean, I feel like I stayed very consistent with my creativity from throughout my life. I mean, there was really never a time that I didn't write or didn't feel like that was important to me and wasn't doing it. And Amy sort of took this big sort of, I mean, was expressing that in other ways and then reconnected with the original, sort of her original self, I think. And so I sometimes think about, you know, this argument about nature and nurture and how it really, it feels like it needs to be, I think our relationship to creativity is sort of, it needs to be informed and formed by both. I mean, we need the support of a community or mentors or parents or peers. You know, it's just, it doesn't continue without it. You know, it might be able to sort of be a spark that's always somehow available, but it needs a community to be visible to ourselves, you know. And I, for me, like the 10 Line Tuesday was a way of finding a community or establishing the community so that I could continue to connect with my own creativity. So it's, I mean, maybe I would have done it anyway, but there's something very sustaining and, you know, enlivening about finding people to be around who appreciate what you do. And I just think that's really important.
Yeah, absolutely. That's why the Creative Sandbox community exists. Exactly. Yeah. For that reason.
Yeah.
I stumbled on something that feels so incredibly obvious now, but that I was only able to articulate within the past few months or something. I wrote a post about this, about that the only difference between artists and everybody else is that, and whatever the art is, writing or painting or whatever, the only difference is that those who we identify and who self-identify as artists or whatever the label is, either they never lost that entitlement to create that everybody is born with, or if they did lose it, they got it back.
Yeah.
So, and that's what my mission is to help people get that entitlement back.
Yeah. Well, and to believe that what they're doing is creative in so many different ways. I mean, we just had a conversation the other night with this woman who said, oh, I'd love my daughter to come to your camp or, you know, come meet you guys because she's really creative and I'm not. And she's like, but I, you know, and then she went on to say, I just love to cook. That's not creative.
Right.
And I'm like, that's so creative. Like, creating a recipe or tweaking one or, you know, using your hands in the kitchen in that way, that's so creative. And the woman who cuts my hair said to me one time, oh, I'm so jealous you're creative. I'm not creative. I'm like, are you kidding? You're creative 20 times a day with every head that comes into your shop. You know, I mean, it's funny. It's like almost our perception too. And I think you're right when you say that sense of entitlement, it's like claiming that you're an artist in whatever way you create.
Exactly. Yeah, I know. I couldn't agree with you more.
And I think that a lot of the work that we do is to really bring people into a creative space sideways, like through a side door, because, you know, when you think about art or creativity, it sounds really difficult. You know, it sounds like you have to be an expert to be good. And the beauty of kind of coming at it sideways by, you know, doing something kind of unselfconsciously creative, like somebody even giving us a word and us writing a poem and sort of revealing the process of writing to them, or showing them how to make, or, you know, having just a really simple instruction for how to do something and then letting them be creative with the process and how, you know, how they're going to decorate it or how they're going to, you know, and watching them show someone else. So teaching a skill that's then easily shared with other people, and people kind of connect to that their own possibility and their own palette of expression, because I think it's very different for everyone. I mean, my palette of expression might be words, Amy's might be through visuals, and someone else's might be like they love to, you know, arrange a little pile of stones out their front door. And they may not think of that as being creative, but it gives them a kind of comfort and connection to the world and an imprint that they've created that's meaningful to them. So, I mean, I guess part of the work is expanding the definition of what creativity is and not having such strict markers of excellence, you know, or kind of dismantling the hierarchy of like what's creative so everything can be.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I was just thinking about, I used to teach around the country calligraphy and book arts. And what was really interesting to me is that, and this is true for me as well, a lot of people who get into calligraphy do so because they think, well, I'm not an artist because I can't draw, or I'm not as good at drawing as this other person or whatever, but they think, but I can write. So how hard can calligraphy be? Well, of course they're in for a big surprise, but it's incredibly hard. But so many people in the calligraphy guilds that I would go and teach for thought of themselves as non-artists. They're doing this incredibly, you know, this skill that's very, takes a lot of patience and determination to learn this skill, and they're applying it in incredibly creative ways, right? Or I would be doing a book arts class with them and teach them different formats, and then they would create something that would completely blow my mind. Maybe they're not technically skilled, maybe it's a little rough around the edges or something, but like the concept and the application of it was just incredible. And it makes sense to me that now what I'm passionate about teaching is more just generally hooking people back up with that creative source and that sense of entitlement, because that's really what I was doing. Every time I'd go teach a calligraphy class, what was really exciting to me was showing people how phenomenally creative they are when they're thinking of themselves as not creative, not artists. And I think most people out there in the world think of themselves as not creative.
Yeah.
Well, I don't actually know if it's most people. I haven't polled, you know, 600 people or whatever. But the general population that I have tended to interact with has that response. Well, I'm not creative. Oh, you're so lucky you're an artist. I'm not creative. or I can't sing, or I can't draw, or whatever. And then I dig a little bit deeper, and almost always there's something going on in their lives that they are in love with or passionate about or whatever. That's phenomenally creative, but they don't see it that way because they have this very strong, you know, this story of not being creative. So they can't see this amazing creative thing as art or creativity. So interesting.
It's funny to me how many people's definition of being creative is drawing.
Oh my God.
We hear it all the time. I can't draw, so I can't take your class. Oh, we've never done drawing in any of our classes. I always laugh when they say that. I'm like, that's not what we do. it's not about drawing. So it's about drawing out what is creative inside of you.
Well, and I was thinking too that one of the things Amy and I always do is work. We always do the assignments that we give, you know, with our students. So because we've had a lot of practice exercising our creative expression doesn't mean that we aren't frightened by it. And I'll say it just, I mean, writing, for example, writing in public and sharing in public is very hard. And it's hard no matter how many times you've done it because it's a raw experience. And it kind of, you know, and it's vulnerable. And it's important that the people, you know, that when we work with people, that they understand that we are in that space right along with them. Yeah. And that it's about, you know, getting comfortable with that discomfort. I think that's really all that it is, you know, being willing to be uncomfortable and seeing what happens, getting curious about what happens. And that probably eight nines out of 10, you're going to get a response that's really supportive for what you're doing because people recognize that it's hard. And so it just takes a kind of willingness to lay it out there. And when you do, it comes back to you a thousandfold and it just creates more confidence in doing it again and again. But it's that, you know, that rawness and vulnerability that is essential. Like you can't really have one without the, you can't express yourself creatively without being vulnerable. It's just one of those prime ingredients. So it's about practicing it over and over again. And kind of maybe doing a little bit of a mind shift about what it is. Like, you know, I'm just practicing being vulnerable, or I'm just exercising this piece of myself. It's not, I'm going to be shot down for telling the truth about or doing, you know, a not so great attempt at something or, you know.
Yes. I taught a class. It was an e-course from the middle of November to the middle of December, a month long, called Creative Courage Lab, excuse me, which is all about helping people share. Like the first step is to get people creating. To get them past that, oh, I'm not creative place, past that fear of it's got to be great or why bother, you know, to get them to do the creating. That's the first step. But the second step, which I believe is so crucial, is to share your work. Because if we never share anything that we create, something is really lacking. The purpose of creating is to touch other people. Or that's one of the purposes. One of the purposes is to feed ourselves, right? That just the act of creation is an amazing thing. It's so fulfilling and nourishing, and it's incredible. Like we need it, but we also need to share it. And that sharing is so scary. And exactly what you said is like 99.89% of the time, or whatever it is, you're going to get a positive reaction. But people are so overly afraid that it's not going to be positive, that it's going to be negative. And it's so rare. Like I made this practice of, it was the 3x5x365 project that really got me into a practice of sharing, you know, sharing stuff, whether it was good or not, just putting it, making it, as Patty Dye would say, make a strong offer and it don't worry about the outcome. It's not about the, let go of the outcome. Just make the strong offer. So I got into the practice of sharing these you know, rough, ragged, imperfect little 3x5 writing things. And then I started sharing my art in process very, you know, very intentionally, like everything in process, I'm going to share it. It's on Instagram, right? So easy. And at first, like nobody's following you anyway, so nobody's going to respond. But seeing the
positive, alone in the room.
But then seeing those, you know, little, like somebody clicked the little heart button or whatever, and I've never seen this person before. Like they don't know me. There's no reason for them to curry favor with me, right? So there must be something in this imperfect in process piece that I've shared that they saw as valuable, that they liked. And I always use the metaphor of the goggles, the glasses. That allows me to take off my gremlin goggles, my hypercritical gremlin glasses, put those down and put on somebody else's glasses and look at my work through their neutral lenses and be able to see it for what it is rather than only what it isn't, where it's lacking, where it isn't matching up to what I, my ideal, what I thought I wanted it to be, or this other person's work or whatever.
So. Well, and what's really so brilliant about reducing the real estate of your creative output is that, especially if you're doing it in a community, I mean, if everyone's got a three by five card to work with, that we don't sort of blow out of proportion what the expectations are for filling it. You know, like I just love to work in small spaces. I love limitations for that reason, because if, you know, and I have a class, an online class that's where we just write three lines every day for 30 days. And that's the assignment. And I give prompts, but you know, you're only supposed to write three lines. And so everyone's writing three lines. No one is, you know, writing paragraphs. No one's writing a novel. Everyone's sort of conforming to the same restriction and using that as a place to explore. So if you kind of know what the boundaries are, in some ways, it's helpful because you can work, you can see what it's like to be creative within them. And Absolutely. That's a really great first step in building a creative practice is let me minimize the space and the time, even the time restriction. Like, let me write for 5 minutes a day instead of saying I'm going to write 1500 words, which is actually quite a lot.
Yeah.
But like, what if I wrote for 5 minutes and you can build up and see what 5 minutes is like. And then, you know, today I'm going to write for 10 minutes and, but to really like reduce the pressure of excellence and, you know, like being an expert by actually being an expert at a really small, limited amount of space first.
Yeah.
And then building from there.
I think the other thing is doing something like a 365 project like you did, or a 100-day project or anything like that, where it becomes not precious because you're doing it every day.
Right. Exactly.
Which sounds funny. It sounds daunting when you think, oh, I'll join the 365 project and have to do something every day. But if you're just limiting yourself to a few minutes a day, maybe you say 30 at the maximum or whatever, but you're doing it daily. So like I'm doing one right now. It's a 365 painting challenge, and every month there's a different theme, and this month it's portraits, and it's like the bane of my existence. I'm terrified of portraits. But I'm just doing it every day. And some days I have 5 minutes, some days I have 30. Yesterday I did a self-portrait. I look like a bearded man. But I posted it because I was like, all right, well, tomorrow I'll do another one. And it hopefully it'll be better. And, you know, I mean, it takes away the pressure of it being precious. And, you know, when you walk into a room and you're like, yeah, these are never going to be on the walls of the MoMA probably, but it's fun. Like, I'm just having fun trying it. I'm doing it, and I'm not taking myself seriously and in that way, you know, like I'm not trying to be anything. I'm just trying.
Yeah.
And it makes it fun.
Totally. Yeah. My Creative Sandbox Manifesto, which I'm looking at on the side of my bookshelves over here. Rule number 4 is think tiny and daily. And for just the reasons that you were talking about. And it also brought up for me, I've been doing improv for about 2.5 years. And one of my very first performance class where we were building up to perform at the end was a theater sports class, which pits two teams against each other. Really, it's about entertaining the audience. It's not really a competition because is all about entertaining the audience. But we had to come up with team names. And the teacher gave us 30 seconds to come up with a team name. You cannot get precious and perfectionistic if you only have 30 seconds. It was brilliant. So that, you know, giving people a little tiny bit of real estate, like whether it's a 3x5 card or a small piece of paper or something, which is what I do for Creative Courage Lab, or a time restraint, is incredibly liberating because we lower those crazy expectations that we put on ourselves.
Yeah.
Looks so like Lisa has a question.
Oh yeah, Lisa wanted to know the name of your class that with the three lines every day. Oh,
it's called Try Writing, T-R-I, writing. And we just finished up a session last week, but there's actually one that I'm starting called 7-Minute Mornings, and it's starting next Monday. And it's very similar. I'm going to offer prompts, and then you have 7 minutes to write. It's a 2-week class. And then I'll probably do another session of Try Writing in March. So you cool. can keep an eye on that. That's, that you can find that on my website or on our website, actually.
Mm-hmm. So it would be,
I think it's, you know,
it would be at
the creativity caravan.com
or at, or what, when, what's your site?
Maya Stein.
Maya Stein?
It's Maya Stein.com. Yeah.
M-A-Y.
And there's a classes.
STEIN.com. Great. Thanks.
Yeah. I just think, to set, you know, when you're saying, you know, what can I really do for in a consistent time? Like what can I actually meet consistently? And I think people tend to set the bar very high at the beginning. Like I will write 1500 words a day. I can do that. And then at the first sign of an impasse, it just goes really quickly. It's like saying, I'm going to run a marathon every day. Well, no, of course not. So, but can you run or can you take a walk for 5 minutes around the block? Absolutely. And do you look forward to doing it? Absolutely. Because it's like a little breather. It's, you don't really think about it as I've got to do this. And I think that those 1500 words or those high expectations start to feel like I've got to do this. I've got to do this. And you start to really quickly lose the passionate connection and the curiosity and the excitement of doing it every day.
Yeah.
So
yeah. I equate it. I talk a lot about keeping your commitment goals ridiculously achievable. Mm-hmm. Even stupidly small is another word I use. Mm-hmm. And I equate it with when your goals are not ridiculously achievable, really tiny, it's like you're standing underneath a pole vaulting bar that's 25 feet in the air, or I don't know how high people are pole vaulting nowadays, but it feels like you have to jump over that bar without the running start and without the pole. And when it's tiny, when it's really ridiculously achievable, it lowers that bar all the way down to the ground. So it's like, boop, boom, you can get past that starting friction, because that's the hardest part, is the starting. And when it's so tiny, then it just pops you past that starting friction.
Yeah. So, similarly, like I was talking about the 365 painting challenge, I found that I need to work in a 4x6 sketchbook, which is small, you know, and I started out with like, I think an 8.5x11 or a 9x12 kind of size. And I was totally daunted. I was like, how am I going to fill up that much space every day? And so I just got down, and now all my sketchbooks are like the 4x6 Moleskin. I don't want a lot of space. And sometimes I make it even smaller and I give myself like a 2x3 inch, you know, square on that page and make the restriction smaller, because I know I probably have maybe only 30 minutes that I can, you know, work on a painting, and I've got to have that constraint in order to not feel like I can't, in order to feel like I can accomplish it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I moving from tiny things, little spaces, small pieces of real estate, I want to move to big things, because you guys have done some really cool big projects. So tell us some of the things that you've done involving bicycles and typewriters and anything else that I might know about.
Well, actually, what I'd love to do is mention the project that we're working on right now, and then we can touch on one that we've completed, just because I like to stay in the present. but so we launched a call for artists for we're calling it the Tiny Book Show, and it's a mobile museum of miniature books that we're going to be traveling around the country with this summer in our caravan. The exhibit, in some cases, will be in the caravan itself, but probably largely in other places. But and these books are, we have about 300 books. We had artists from all over the country and parts of the world, all ages, kids, adults, send us their miniature books. They're all under 3 inches in dimension. And they're really wonderful constructions and just beautiful, beautifully made and interesting content. And so that's going to be traveling. We're going to actually start touring with that this spring, but the bulk of the trip will happen starting in July. So we have kind of a tentative schedule on our website. We can post that. So that's what we're working on right now. But the idea behind most, probably, or all of our collaborations is bringing creative communities together, and especially communities that wouldn't know that that was possible, or that would be sort of not, that they didn't know that they could do something like that. So the beauty of the tiny books is that they're made by amateurs and professionals, and so there's a kind of a gathering place for creativity in the exhibit itself, which is wonderful. Do you want to talk about our lesson?
Yes. Well, so part of the inspiration for this project was actually a collection of tiny books that we took on our last large-scale project, which is what Melissa was referencing, which is called Typewriter 2, the Tandem Poetry Tour. And that project was, Maya and I rode a tandem bicycle from Boulder, Colorado to Beloit, Wisconsin. So we rode through 4 states. We rode about 1,400 miles on a tandem bicycle. And we were towing 2 vintage typewriters behind us on a little cart. And we stopped every day. We had between 30 and 35 stops along our route. So there was a daily stop, sometimes 2, in a different small town in the Midwest. And we built a little free library in each town, or we donated a little free library to each town. Sometimes we actually physically helped build it when we got there, and a lot of the towns wanted to build it so that when we arrived, there was like a grand opening of the little free library. And before we left, we were making tiny books in one of our classes here in New Jersey, just for fun, with some kids and adults. And people saw them on Facebook. Maya posted a few, and they wanted to be tiny book authors. So we said, oh, we'll ship out to the first 5 people that say they want to be a tiny book author, we'll ship a tiny book. And we ended up shipping out 150 blank tiny books. And by the time we left, we had almost 400 tiny books in our collection that we carried with us. So our caravan was with us, and a friend was driving that as we were riding the bicycle. And people were just obsessed with these tiny books. I mean, it's this miniature world, you know, that feeling of opening up, and all of those were 1 by 2 inches.
Wow.
And they were all how-to books, because we decided everybody's an expert on something, which is sort of what we learn in third grade, right? I think that's like one of your first creative writing exercises is to write a how-to book, whether it's how to make peanut butter and jelly or what. But people were, they illustrated them, they you know, hand wrote them. They were these little pearls of wisdom that were so exciting. And it was so fun to watch people, you know, sort through our library and look at those tiny books, you know, while we were having the other events. So they ended up being the inspiration for this next project, because we thought, well, we've got to take that a step further and figure out a way to have, you know, people create tiny books, maybe a little bit bigger, but just to be able to be even more creative with them. They didn't have to be how-to books this time. It was just sort of limitless, and people did the most amazing, amazing things in 3 inches or under. It has blown my mind as they've come in.
I think what's really kind of neat about these projects that I'm learning from is that we don't know, like, it's not like we planned, like, we're going to do this let's figure out how to do this. Like, let's figure out, you know, like it took something, an event and another project to lead us into this one. And it took, I mean, I did a trip by myself, in 2012, I rode my bicycle with a typewriter in tow to Wisconsin from Massachusetts. And that was sort of like a little, kind of like a pilgrimage. And I gathered writings from other people every day. And that was a bit, you know, that when I came back, it was like, well, I'm not really done. Like, how can we expand on this? You know, there's energy to this that's not, that's still wanting to be expressed. And so then we created this tandem poetry tour experience. And Amy and I, it's in addition to building a little free libraries, wrote on the spot poetry for 30 days to strangers. And so it was just like, you know, sometimes I think we typically don't get this like aha moment of knowing exactly what we're supposed to be doing. We sometimes have to do something that makes sense. It's like, this is the next, this feels like right for this time. And then it reveals the next stage or the next, you know, the next chapter of whatever it is. And we just have to be, you know, I just feel like as an artist, as a creative person, you know, the beauty of being open to not knowing is, and accepting that I don't know what's going to happen next until I do, you know? And so I think we're trying to really stay connected to that sort of intuitive yes, like what's happening now that feels like a yes. And where, and because that the yes is leading us to places that we don't know yet, you know? And so this tiny book tour, you know, it's, I feel like there's something inside of the experience that's tucked in there so deep that we don't see it yet that will lead to the next piece of information. And that's where our business is really centered on, is like, what's, you know, what's tucked so far deep inside, but you sense, you know, you're interested enough to find out and what's next, and you go there and something gets revealed. And so we don't know until we do. That's kind of like, I don't know. I think that's like the little riddle of continuing to be engaged in art, is like, you just don't know until you do. So you just keep doing what you know, and then something is revealed to you, and then you can figure out what to do next with it.
Yeah.
You know, thinking about form is a big part of exploring the possibilities of like how the work can be shared, and how it can be digested by other people. Because, you know, like the 10-line form, I wanted to write, you know, I was writing poetry, but I thought, well, how can I write poetry in a way that's easy to access and easy to sort of understand? And you don't have to be a, you know, liberal arts expert to get it. And so finding the form is really important. And I think for us, like the tiny book show or a lot of the other things that we do with our classes, is finding the right, again, like a container that has a lot of like potential in it, just within it, just because it's a container, and it can be a card, it could be a series of cards, it can be like a keychain of quotes, it can be, I don't know. I mean, there's just so many possibilities now that you can create on your own and investigate, and lots of inspirations to look at and consider. So it's not that it has to be this one dimensional, like it's got to be on this thing. Like it's got to be on a canvas for it to be considered art, or it's got to be in a book for it to be considered viable. You know, like, oh, I'm a writer. I think that's a mistake a lot of people make, is mislabel the label. It's like, if you're a writer, you love words. If you're an artist, you love exploring creatively in a visual way. So there's a lot of, I know I'm rambling, sorry, but I can feel him. He's like, wrap it up. Yeah.
I didn't say it.
I know. It's funny being a word person, because I actually sometimes or frequently struggle to get to the like heart of what I mean. And I'm just like hoping and praying that some I'm circling and it's getting there.
I'm kind of glad to hear that because I know your ability with words is so, I admire it so much. So it's really cool to see somebody who's so, you know, skilled and has worked so for years and years and years to develop your skill with words and that you have this feeling of struggling sometimes.
Well, I'll tell you where it came from, because I actually grew up speaking Hebrew and I didn't learn English until I was 7. And I think I'm always struck by, you know, why do we do what we do? Like, why do we move towards the things that we love? And I really believe it's because we need help with them ourselves. You know, I think we teach or we do what we need to learn.
Yep.
And communication is one of those things. Like, I love words. I love to write. I love to express myself through words. But there's always this sense of I'm not getting it right, or I'm still trying to figure it out, or you know, I'm still like, I'm trying to locate. It's like a big sleuthing expedition every time I speak or write or anything. And that's part of the experience for me is like, it's not going to be exactly, you know, I'm going to try to get it as close as I can.
Yeah. Oh God. That little phrase just encapsulates like my whole life as a creative.
Try to get it as close as I can.
That's right.
Well, I think too, just to circle back to that idea of staying open to possibility, and it's the like that for me is the key to all kinds of creating, and for believing that you're creative or showing someone a way to be creative. And that class that you referenced in the beginning that we taught was called Choose Your Next Adventure. And it wasn't about telling someone what their next adventure was, because we have absolutely no idea. But it was about sort of creating this toolbox and doing these small exercises that might enlighten or inform you in a way that would shift something, or that would become the yes, or, you know, and by staying open to possibility and sort of letting things, you know, happen naturally and just saying yes to all different things, just choosing these next little pieces. Yes, I want to try that. And I want to do that. And that looks like fun. And I have no idea what it means for anything, you know, about me or about my life, but I'm going to stay open to that possibility and I'm going to try it. That's, I think, when, you know, those next adventures kind of find us.
I think it's really funny that when we're kids, we're not thinking about what does it all mean in the grand scheme of things, or am I doing the right thing? We operate out of a space of curiosity and engagement with our environment. We're interested in finding out the answer, but we don't try to contextualize it before we've started. We don't think, oh, it could be this or that. You know, it's like, we operate from a space of, I don't know. And I think as adults, the really interesting, you know, kind of hilarious irony of it is we're always trying to make sense and provide a context for our decisions. And we're looking for the sense of it and the journey of it. And we kind of like, that's how we frame things, Liz. Like, well, this, you know, we make a lot of choices based on whether or not we think it makes sense for us and what we're doing. And so, but we're able to, you know, the beauty of being an adult is you're able to look back and say, well, oh, you know, if I hadn't gone to Italy at age 20, I would never have learned how to make pasta, or I would never have met that person who took me to, you know, Scandinavia when I was 28. Like, we start to see we're able to see the steps that were necessary for X, Y, and Z to happen.
Yeah.
But it's really hard to say, you know, I don't know. And to make choices from an I don't know place. And so, like, I think the Choose Your Next Adventure class and a lot of the classes that we do and experiences that we have are designed to get people back into that space of finding out from that place. Because it's such a, that's where creativity is too, is like being in a place of I don't know about something and investigating it.
And just being curious and open to that delight. Like, I love those moments when I see somebody just delight in what they're doing for no other reason than it's fun or it's exciting or it feels good. You know, I love that moment. And I think that's where so much of our creative expression can be beneficial to all of us. Absolutely.
I want to, 1 minute left before the top of the hour. Do you guys have a hard stop at
okay,
cool. Do you mind hanging out a little bit longer if people have questions? Okay, awesome. I wanted to open it up to everybody who's here live. If you have any questions that you want to ask Amy and Maya or things that you resonated with that you wanted to mention, you can go ahead and unmute yourself. And I wanted to also say hi to Pam, who I know knows Amy and Maya from camp. Anybody have any questions that they want to ask?
I guess you can type them too.
Comments. Yeah, you can also type in the text chat. If you're logged in on your computer, just mouse over the video and you'll see a bar up here at the bottom and there's an icon for chat. And if you click on that, it'll open up a new window and you can type a question right in there. What I wanted to ask you about is, the thing that I remember from that Choose Your Own Adventure workshop at Life as a Verb Camp is that you talked about having a board on the corner of your kitchen or something like that. Mm-hmm. And that really struck me. And I would love if you would share about what that is.
Yeah, we had just a wall space in our kitchen that was blank. And I think in the beginning, we really just sort of put a bulletin board up there and started pinning stuff to it. And then we ended up just taking a big roll of brown craft paper and putting that up there. And just anytime we came across something, and that literally could mean a business card, a
quote,
like, I mean, it could really be anything. It would just sort of get pinned up there. And for both of us, we started to realize that it was becoming a map of some kind. And again, this speaks to that sort of curiosity and openness. We did not have any attachment to any outcome that we were, you know, that we, there was something specific that we were creating. It was just an inspiration wall. And it really became a place where, like, the typewriter to project almost came alive on that board. And it was like, it was just because we were pinning up things that made us curious, that spoke to us, that delighted one of our senses somehow. And that ended up becoming this board. And we have one up now. We took it all down when the project was over and put up a new piece of craft paper. And I don't think we know where it's leading, but maybe it's...
I don't think it's funny because I think that one is... I'm not sure where that one is. Like, it, right now it's actually been folded up because it's so heavy. It's like it's gotten
so many things on it.
It actually fell off the wall. But what's kind of interesting is at this point, because another project has come out of that typewriter trip sort of naturally, I think the board is, I'm not really sure of the role of the board at this point, because we are moving toward a direction with this project. I think, but the board is, I mean, regardless, it is about sort of things that catch your eye. And they don't have to make sense, and they don't have to be in the context of anything in particular. I mean, you might be, you know, it just might be so out of order that you see something that is speaking to you, but that's a great thing to put on. Just as a reminder, it's a visual reminder of like, oh, I'm sparked by that. And if it no longer sparks you to look at it, then it goes away. You take it down. I mean, that's the other kind of responsibility in keeping this thing up, is that you have to curate it to some degree, so that it's the things that are there feel current and you're connected to them. And, you know, it begins to be a map. I mean, and actually literally on our last board, we had a map because we were like, we'd like to travel. We want to do something that involves moving around and meeting people and being in places other than where we live, and just, you know, so sometimes it is a map because you're like, maybe you really want to go to North Dakota because something is there. You're just drawn to the name. So, you know, write down the name and who knows, it's just, there's sort of endless inspirations that could be, you know, kind of sparking you and intriguing you. And that's where they can go. Just in a very, you know, place that's not confined. I think that's a place where confinement is actually not good, because you want to feel like you have enough space that something big could even be tacked up. And, you know, there's just like plenty of space for all kinds of ideas to mingle.
I really love that. Angie asked if you happen to have a tiny book handy that you could share on camera.
Sure.
You got one? Yeah. Sure.
And how did you get the books for this current tiny book project? Did you put out a call for?
Yeah, we put out a call, and I think we started an Instagram hashtag. We're kind of trying to be mindful about social media, because I think we get very easily overwhelmed and distracted by it. So we kind of we actually eliminated our Facebook page for our business completely, and are now just relying on our website and newsletter and Instagram, and we have no Twitter account. So we started a tiny. It's called. I think the hashtag was Tiny Book Show. And if you go on Instagram and do a search for Tiny Book Show, you'll see we've posted a lot of books there. But we did a call for entries and kind of like modeled it after any kind of call for entries that you, like if you were holding a writing, you know, if a literary journal is holding a writing contest, we asked for a very minimal submission fee for the books. And I don't know. But they're all in it. It's like, there's not a tryout, you know, all the books that have come our way are going to be in the show. So we have almost 300.
So I just pulled a couple to kind of show you some examples. So this one is an artist. I think she's actually on Long Island, New York. And she did these tiny illustrations. This is actually how to make a sketchbook. So she has these little illustrations and these tiny drawings and the instructions for making a tiny sketchbook, which I loved.
Oh my God, that is adorable.
But I mean, you can see how small it is. It's like 2 inches.
And these are not, there's only a few how-to books. There was no restriction on the kind of book it was. So
this one is about 3x3, but you can see it's incredibly thick. This is an artist out of California, Dawn Gonzalez, and she actually decided to replicate her childhood diaries.
Oh my God.
So on the right-hand side of the page is her diary entry from ages 9 to 16, and on the left-hand side of the page, she answered back as her 47-year-old self, giving sort of like advice, like, well, what would I have said to myself back then? It's brilliant and hilarious and heartbreaking and it's amazing. And we've actually had some communication with her since she sent it, and she's told us how it has begun to inform the work that she's doing currently in her life. She's a pattern designer, and she just said she couldn't believe how it changed things for her to make that book. And this is one more example I'll show you. This actually, so the cover of this is made out of polymer clay.
Oh, cool.
This is pretty thick too, mostly because of the cover. And then it's got this metal hooks that have kind of gotten it together. And then she just did these tiny watercolors inside. They're just so beautiful and really simple. And then she just left blank space. So she said, you know, and that one says I am. And so if somebody purchases this one, they can use it as like a tiny journal but I just thought the illustrations were so pretty.
Wow.
So yeah, the other piece was that we invited artists to, if they wanted to have their books for sale, to set the price of the book. So most of the books in the show are going to be for sale. And then they'll be delivered at the end. They'll be sent to the owner at the end of the run.
So, and we're going to have a digital catalog too, because we were thinking, oh, there's people that have already said, as we're posting them on Instagram, oh my God, I would buy that one. I want that one. So there'll be a digital catalog in a shop on our site for people who want to buy books that maybe aren't in any of the cities where we're stopping. So the three that I showed you are, I don't know that they're all professional book artists necessarily. They're all artists, but we also got, I mean, some incredible, we had high school students and middle school students whose teachers found out about the project and they wanted their students to join. So we got some really unbelievable work from students. I think our youngest came from a 7-year-old boy who wrote 2 volumes. He wanted to do a series and they're called The Adventures of Super Banana. And his tiny books look like a refrigerator. So you open the doors like a refrigerator and inside there's a story about Super Banana, 2 different adventures. Hilarious. And his mom said he brought it to school to show the kids before she brought it to us. And everybody in his class wanted to make tiny books, not for our show, but just because they wanted to be authors, which I loved. I loved that.
Well, that's a great thing to sort of, like. I mean, that's one of the reasons I think that we're so delighted by this project is because it gives people a venue for trying something out. You know, you don't have to be a professional book artist to make these. There's tons of really simple templates and tutorials online that people could access easily. And but just this feeling of, because there is a kind of wonderful like sense of identity when you can say, oh, I'm an author. I mean, despite the fact that, you know, we're talking about, you don't have to write a book to be a writer. You don't have to have a painting hung in a museum to be an artist, but there is a kind of like really lovely, you know, gravitational pull towards these titles too, because it gives a sense of, I don't know, legitimacy, I think. So when you have a 7-year-old boy who says, I'm an author, it's kind of like, oh, this is great, because hopefully he'll always feel that way, or he'll start to, you know, encourage other people as he has to write other books and to be their own authors. And you know, that title, that label is so expansive. You know, it's not confined to a published work of,
and empowering. Know. We have another one written by an 8-year-old girl. It's called How to Laugh. And some of the most brilliant lines I've ever seen in any book. One of them is spread the ha-has like the flu. Build emotions in your belly. Like, just, this came out of an 8-year-old's mouth. You know, I'm just mind. And she's so excited that book is going to travel with us on this, you know, on this journey, and that people are going to read her words.
I love this experience too, because it's introduced me to the world of book arts, which I knew really nothing about. And so it's like, there are actual book artists that have submitted to the show, and they've got these very complicated folds and, you know, these really intricate constructions. And so I feel like, oh, I get to learn about this, you know, this thing that I had no idea that I was going to learn about, you know, 2 years ago. And so it's actually demanding some research on my part so that I can like legitimately, you know, speak to other book artists that we meet on the way and, you know, I
so
guess
cool.
Just know what a signature is. And I don't know. Like a million
What's a bone folder? Things like that.
Is the call for entries closed now, or are you still accepting?
Well, it is closed, but what we can do is, I mean, would you be willing to?
Well, we have people actually, I mean, it's closed, but and I think for the catalog purposes, it kind of has to stay closed, but other people have said, well, can I just send one along that can travel with you? Because we have our previous library, the one I was talking about that has those 400 tiny books in it, that's coming with us too. Those books won't be for sale. They'll just be, you know, traveling with us for people to look at as well. And so, I mean, I don't think we're ever going to turn down.
We would
tiny
never
books.
Turn down tiny books.
And when you travel, are you going to be riding a tandem bike again, or are you going to be driving?
No, we're going to drive. It's a pretty quick trip. I mean, it's by, in terms of distance, we're doing the circumnavigation of the country in about 45 days. So,
wow.
It's going to be very fast. So we have to.
How do you determine where you're going to stop? And then how do you find a place that you're going to be able to display the books, and are you doing activities at the same time? Or
our first call actually came from, I mean, we said we were doing this trip, but we didn't actually explain anything about it. And we honestly didn't know what that meant. We just said it was going to be the tiny book show and that we were going to tour with whatever, you know, books we got. And we had no idea what that looked like. But the first call came from actually the Miniature Book Society, which we didn't even know existed. So it's full of members who make and collect miniature books, which means that they're under 3 inches. And they called and asked us if we would speak at their convention in Texas in August. So we said yes to that. And then that opened the door to, well, what does this trip look like? If we have to be in Texas in August, where can we go? Like, when can we leave New Jersey and where can we go before that? So, and then we just started filling in, and we've had calls from places like, Cincinnati, libraries, arts councils. It's a combination of them finding out about us and reaching out, and us reaching out to communities where, you know, now that we sort of have a loose route, then just saying like, would you like us to come and how can we get there?
But it's a lot of it is also like, where do we want to go? I mean, where is it interesting to visit? And, you know, when we were on our typewriter trip 2 summers ago, we were drawn to the Midwest. I mean, we were curious about this place in the country that seems to be avoided by people. It was like, well, why are they avoiding the middle of the country? What's there? You know, I had never really spent time in the Midwest. And so it was just, again, it's sort of like, well, I don't know. So what's there? And, you know, this country is huge, and I've only lived in a few of its states. So, even though we're kind of zipping through, it's a kind of like cultural exploration. You know, it's like, this is not just let's bring these books to places, but let's see what we can, like, what do we really feel like experiencing and where do we want to go? And, I kind of think that part of it is really trusting the intelligence of not knowing why, you know, like, we don't know why we're going to South Dakota, but we are, because we just decided we're going to South Dakota. And I think we'll figure out when we get there, while we're there, you know, like, what is it? Maybe it's a book artist that we're supposed to be meeting, or maybe it's a child that we're supposed to be inspiring, or, you know, a piece of steak that is going to be like the most killer steak that we've ever had. So, like, I sometimes think, like, to know, you know, again, just sort of to allow the journey, allow it to be an adventure, and, you know, to have enough things in place that you're not just aimlessly wander. I mean, we just don't have the time to aimlessly wander the country. So we had to say, this is the amount of time we can go. And, you know, we had enough set up, or places that were interested in having us come, that then it began to kind of vaguely create a shape, you know, that directed some of the decisions that we're making about the places we're going.
Yeah. And what, when you get to the places that you're going to be stopping, what's going to happen? What are you going to be doing there?
So the exhibit will be set up, in, like Maya said, in part inside the caravan, but because it's summer, we know that there'll be some factors like heat in Texas in August is going to be an issue. So we have been setting up, events with, either libraries or arts councils or somewhere where they have a space that we can bring it indoors. And we're still working out what the exhibit is actually going to look like, how the tiny books are going to be housed. And then there's also attached to it a bookmaking workshop, which we'll facilitate. And we're trying to partner with local artists in whatever town or city we stop in, that may want to come and help us out and show, you know, maybe a way to make books that they know of that we don't know. We know some really simple ways, and we want to keep it pretty simple, but we'll provide the materials, and people will be able to take away a tiny book with, you know, with them. So hopefully they'll be inspired by the work that they see and then, you know, join in the fun and have something to take home. So
are you coming to the San Francisco Bay Area?
We are.
We are.
Yay. Do you have dates for that yet?
Yeah. So if you go on our blog, again, on the creativitycaravan.com, I think
there's a link to the blog. The latest blog post has our tentative schedule. Cool. I think we're in San Francisco, the Bay Area. I think it's like the 25th and 6th of July when we plan to be there. So
cool.
But our basic sketched out itinerary is on the blog with all the 40 dates or whatever, states and cities. So
cool. And are you doing a crowdfunding for this one like you've done in the past?
We are. I think we're doing a combination of both crowdfunding and direct funding from the hosts of the tour. So, if we've already connected with, we've already connected with certain organizations that will pay a certain fee for us to come. But I think for the actual, we're probably going to be doing, we're sort of been talking about that because it's going to be a little cost prohibitive otherwise for us to just.
Even though gas has gotten a lot
cheaper. I think that ultimately we want to get people excited about the show where they live if they're in the path of the tour, and to get their friends excited. And crowdfunding is a really wonderful way to do that, to get a feeling of engagement and participation before the event even happens. So we're kind of looking into some options there.
We're probably going to crowdfund city by city.
Small campaigns in each of the places that we're going.
Very cool. I'm really excited to watch as it proceeds and happens and grows and evolves. Cool. You guys, thank you so much for taking time to chat with everybody here and to share your stories and show us the tiny books and share your really brilliant, wise thinking. It's such a treat to get to talk with you. And thank you for staying at overtime, too.
No problem.
No problem.
Thanks for having us. And thanks for everybody who's live today.
I know. Nice to see your faces.
Yeah. Thank you, everybody who came and joined in live. I will see all of you over in our Facebook group. And Amy and Maya, I will talk to you soon.
Okay.
Sounds good.
All right. Thanks, you guys.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
That's it. That's a wrap. If you're getting value out of this podcast, the best way to thank me is to tell your friends and leave a 5-star rating and review on iTunes. Of course, only leave a 5-star rating if you authentically believe it should be a 5-star rating. Here's the thing. When you leave a review, it helps other people find the show, and it would mean the world to me. Just go to livecreativenow.com/iTunes-review. That's livecreativenow.com/iTunes-review for step-by-step instructions on how to leave that review. I would be so incredibly grateful. Until next time, thanks again for joining me, and go get creating. Mwah!
Live creative now.
Subscribe at livecreativenow.com.